Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood. With me this evening is my co-host, as always,
Chad Mitz.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world genre movie news. So the world has finally seen the endgame. We all finally know all the secrets of the endgame. And here to direct us and guide us through all the spoilers is our guest, Jim Vavida from IGN.com. Hi, Jim. How are you doing?
Hey, guys. How are you doing today? It's crazy that we are finally at the end of the Infinity Saga.
Yeah, I'm waiting for Marvel to take their $450 for a box set from me. But, so set the scene for us. I know you were able to make the premiere. What was the atmosphere in that room like, and the anticipation, and what were some of your feels coming out of the movie after your first screening?
I will say that, you know, as an experience, the premiere felt like kind of like any other premiere, except it was even more star-studded. But there was definitely at the end, they stopped in mid-credits. They didn't show the entire end credits so that you didn't get that kind of clanging metal sound at the end. But the entire cast got up on stage, and Kevin Feige and it was pretty moving. I mean, for me, it was incredible because the Infinity Saga has been the majority of my career at IGN, has been covering that. I was on the set of Iron Man 2 when Downey found out that Chris Hemsworth was cast as Thor. I remember him saying, oh, the Australian kid got it. And now here we are, and they're all up on stage together. So it was pretty surreal.
I can imagine. I feel the exact same way. I was a sophomore in college when the MCU started, and now I'm, you know, obviously many years past college. So it'll be an interesting experience for sure to see where we go with the next 5-year plan. But let's talk about this movie, and let's talk about, you know, some full spoilers for this film. So if you were writing the review, which I know you didn't, I know we had a very good reviewer do the post for IGN.com. What would your
lead, Laura Prudham.
Right. What would your lead have been?
My lead, my opening?
Yes.
it probably wouldn't have been too different from hers. I mean, the thing is, we have to be very mindful of spoilers. So I guess I would just say that it was a bittersweet but fully satisfying conclusion to this, you know, huge investment of time and emotion over the over a decade now for both fans and just film followers. So, yeah. Can't really write my lead on the fly like that.
So, what were some things that you enjoyed about the film? I feel like that second act is where the most questions are going to come in, or the most concerns are going to come in. But what were the things that you liked the most about this film?
I liked the quieter, more dramatic moments. I thought the emotion was authentic, and the you cared about what was going on. I was surprised that they dealt with the actual grimness of what happened with Thanos snapping his fingers. I mean, that is a pretty hefty amount of time they spend as just a pure drama before anything kind of truly superhero-y happens. Like, they do their big mission to take out Thanos, and then it's like, boom, you're into a drama for a while. So, I did like that stuff, and I love the fan service moments. That final battle is just a giant splash page come to life. I liked that there were stakes, even though, you know, I think we all went in knowing that Cap and Iron Man's stories were going to come to a close. But I thought, you know, the emotion and the impact was still there.
What did you think of the second act? Because my feelings were that the second act is where the film drags the most. And I felt that way, I feel, mainly because of having Thanos need to know what was going on in order to bring him to the present. What were your thoughts about that second act and all of the time travel bits?
Well, I think the time travel stuff, like, the movie is trying to have it both ways, in a way, like it's trying to acknowledge the inherent wonkiness of the whole thing and the paradoxical nature of any attempt at writing about time travel. And so they try to use humor and like being self-aware of the issues, but it doesn't erase the fact that it opens up a whole can of worms there. Like you're left scratching your head, like, wait a minute, did they break their own rule? Did I miss something? I didn't really mind the second act. I mean, I see what you mean, though, but the Thanos thing was definitely an engineered way to kind of create a ticking clock and some drama there. You know, I think that, if anything, that just opens up more questions about, well, wait a minute, did everything still happen? You have to assume that it did. But it doesn't really add up. I mean, I know people will make the argument that it does, but I've seen the movie twice now, and I'm still like, I don't think I really understand if this would pan out this way, but emotionally it feels right.
Well, you know, Jim, as the Ancient One said, all you gotta do is just put all the stones back in place, and then everything is fine. Nope, no branches, no... Well,
I read an interesting thing at the wrap. This guy pointed out, their writer Phil Owen pointed out that, okay, yeah, you got to put the stones back, but you got to put them back the way you found them, mm-hmm. you know, and they're all in crystal form now. So that wouldn't that mean you'd have to put the ether back as like a gas or whatever? You'd have to put the tesseract back together, like, you know, so yeah, it kind of opens up this whole can of worms there of like, well, wait, it's not that easy to put them back then, or even like, you know, Cap putting the one from Guardians back in, like you saw the what it did to Nebula's hand and what Quill went through to try and get it in the first one. So like, yeah, it would be a kind of a fun streaming series of just Cap's, you know, adventures to put everything back.
What was your favorite cameo?
God, there were so many. I think that's a good one, because I've been writing up all the Easter egg stuff. I guess I like that they brought in the kid from Iron Man 3. That was nice, unexpected. You know, I think we all expected, you know, the dusted characters to return, but, and that Red Skull would probably pop up again because they'd have to go get the Soul Stone. But like, yeah, the fact that at the end they brought in, you know, Harley Keener from Iron Man 3, still played by the same actor, Ty Simpkins, but now he's like, I don't know, teens or 20 or something. That was a nice touch.
Yeah, I think for me, the simple things, like the callback to the elevator fight from A Winter Soldier.
Yeah, yeah.
Bringing Robert Redford back, who apparently didn't retire after
the game. That's the crazy thing, right? Everyone was saying Old Man and the Gun is his final movie role, and to think it's going to be Avengers Endgame is insane.
Yeah, especially with that bad wig.
I don't know if that's a wig. He just dyes his hair.
Maybe. But I just thought that the cameos really added something. You know, everybody put out these lists of movies that you need to see before you see Endgame, and as it turns out, you need to see all of them mm-hmm. to really get a yeah. full, rich experience. Chad, did you have a question?
I'm going to give Jim the opportunity to talk about your favorite topic, which is Brian's got a very, very affectionate feeling for Pepper Potts, and in this movie, much to my chagrin, but to his appreciation, she got to put on the armor and go full Pepper Potts. And that did lead to the scene with all of the ladies gathered together. And someone put it on Twitter, but it seems like they said, if Disney put this GIF out of just all the ladies showing up, the more we retweet it, the more we'll likely get this movie. So I guess I'm saying, what do you see, where do you see us going from there? And is this A-Force Ladies Avengers thing a possibility now that we're after the Endgame?
Yeah, I don't know if it's necessarily a possibility, because those characters, so many of them are literally scattered all over the universe, really, or all over the galaxy. So, I mean, I think they could do something with it. Yeah, I mean, I love that thing. I thought it was just a great kind of like giant Easter egg of a thing. It reminded me of the old like like they, you know, she armored up in Iron Man 3, so it wasn't like it was unprecedented. So I think if anything, we will see some version of a, like an all-female superhero team. I don't know if it'll be that lineup though. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think clearly with the popularity of Valkyrie and Captain Marvel, now Koye and Shuri, and like, yeah, I think they would be remiss to not do something around that. But yeah, I'm not sure who's going to be still around going forward. Like, are Ant-Man and the Wasp still around? Like, will Wasps still be doing anything? Yeah, I don't know. And my bigger question is, how did the Asgardians get all their winged horses and soldiers back? I mean, Hela killed, like, their whole army, and then when they were escaping Ragnarok on a ship, all you saw were, like, basically the peasants of Asgard getting on there. You didn't, you know, all the working folks, you didn't see anybody with winged horses. So, like, where the hell did they come from?
Yeah, so I didn't even think about that the first time, but I saw it again this morning, and as she's flying around, I'm like, where'd that horse come from? But I was like, I'm just going to go with it.
Yeah, I thought all those, like, died thousands of years ago, right? Mm-hmm. That was, like, her whole traumatic backstory.
So,
but it looked badass.
Yes, the whole Avengers Assemble moment kicks ass. What was your most unexpected or disappointing moment from the film?
That's interesting. I think maybe the Black Widow Hawkeye sequence on Boromir. We knew one of them was going to die, but I didn't, all the Hawkeye stuff didn't, like, I thought it was okay, but it didn't really do much for me because it seemed really kind of darkly violent and a little bit out of place in the movie. I mean, yeah, we saw Thanos get beheaded and all that, but, you know, it was some pretty gruesomely violent stuff, and it raises a lot of questions. Like, so did he just spend the last 5 years, and I know this is going to trigger some people, but, like, spend the last 5 years being, like, angry, violent, old white guy running around killing minorities? Because it's like, he goes to Japan, and he goes to Mexico, and, like, you just, like, what's up with you, Hawkeye? I think you need some therapy here, dude. But, yeah, I don't know. I thought the Hawkeye and Black Widow and Boromir stuff was a little predictable because you knew one of them was going to have to go, but I didn't think there was really anything anywhere further for them to take his character. Mm-hmm. And then killing off Black Widow, it's kind of like the only way to get the Soul Stone is for a woman to fall off a mountain. Like, they kind of already did that in Infinity War, you know?
Well, for me, that just seems like a really dick move by Nebula, because Nebula was aware of how they had to get that stone, and it very clearly appears that she did not tell either Barton nor Natasha, hey, this is what you're going to have to do.
No, they reference at one point that his daughter died doing it. I don't think they, yeah, but she didn't quite spell out, you know, well, here's the deal.
And as far as the Hawkeye thing goes, like, for me, I felt like they were just retrotting the Age of Ultron beat, where, like, Whedon throughout that movie teases that Hawkeye is going to die, and at the end, Baton switches it out for Quicksilver, and I feel like they did the same thing here with the falling off of the mountain. And I guess we now know that the Black Widow solo movie is going to be a prequel now.
Yeah.
Yeah. It makes you wonder, like, and I'm curious what your guys' thoughts are. So this is in the future. So if somebody gives their, you know, sacrifices themselves for the Soul Stone, like, what? How? The stone was already taken. So what does sacrificing yourself do to get? Well, wait a minute. So they go back in time.
Yeah.
Black Widow dies, and so then Cap will have to go back, somehow put it back. I don't know how that works without killing someone. And then Thanos and Gamora are still going to show up anyways.
Hey, I'm all for that because it means we get Cap and Red Skull in the same place at the same time for like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought basically that was the most trickiest aspect of that, because, like, technically, if you want to get down to the nuts and bolts of it, they go back to 2014 because they drop off Nebula and War Machine. So technically, if Natasha dies in 2014, nothing in Winter Soldier happens. So
it's that she can exist in two places at the same timeline.
Yeah, this is where this time travel stuff gets all wonky, because this is 2000 and, well, let's see, 5 years. 2023 is Natasha dying in 2014, and that 2014 Natasha that's still got to go on.
Which is how we get around the Gamora issue.
Yeah, because now we have past Gamora running around in whatever the present day is there.
Yeah, go ahead, Jim.
No, I was going to say, what did you guys think of the, if there's anyone whose story kind of gets erased in a way, it's more Gamora. Because, you know, clearly, like, her arc from the Guardians movies is over, but it reminds me a bit of, like, Star Trek 2, 3, 4, where it's like, okay, Spock dies in 2, they find a way to bring him back in 3, but he kind of, like, doesn't really have much of his memory intact, but it's still him, where all these experiences that he had kind of gets reset. So I'm curious to see in Guardians 3, then. I guess it's the search for Gamora.
You mean the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, or as I like to now call it, As Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Which brings me to my next question. We know that James Gunn wrote a final draft of his screenplay in May of 2018. We know that he turned it into Disney, and we know that he was fired in July of 2018. And we know that they were going to use James Gunn's script for May of 18 to shoot Guardians 3. Was he fully aware that Thor was going to end Endgame on the ship with the Guardians? And do you believe that that's included in whatever the version of Guardians 3 we end up getting is?
I would assume he did know, because he wasn't in the doghouse at the time that they were filming. They filmed Endgame and Infinity War basically concurrently, so he would have been aware. I'm almost certain he would have been aware of what the arcs of those characters were going to be. It would seem out of character for Marvel to have not been lining all that stuff up. So I think he would be aware of it. I don't know if he necessarily, how much he was planning on having Thor in it. We don't know if Thor will be in it. Maybe Thor will be like Captain Marvel is in this one. He just shows up and then he's gone, you know?
Yeah.
I think it also, too, it calls into question, like, contracts and, you know, putting Thor in there now definitely muscles out, you know, Quill and Gamora in a way, too. It becomes the Thor movie and everyone is his sidekick.
Right. And, of course, Thor no longer is a king of a peoples as he hands off the mantle. Your thoughts on where we stand at the end of this film as far as our OG Avengers literally handing their mantles off one by one?
Yeah, I mean, I know the Hawkeye show apparently is going to follow like a young protege there. I mean, I'm sure they'll assemble, no pun intended, a new group of Avengers at some point. But I think we're probably not going to have any sort of proper Avengers lineup for a little while between the streaming shows and whatever their other movie plans are for the next 5 years. I don't know. Maybe they could just bring. They'd have to bring in a whole new lineup, and they could probably take a page from like New Avengers, and like these are the kids or the next generation of people who grew up like idolizing these characters. And don't forget also like the Sony deal with Spider-Man is up with Far From Home. So whether or not that is a deal that is renewed, we'll see. I think it's when I talked to Kevin Feige, he was non-committal about it, you know? So, we'll see. We'll see what happens there. Oh, I have a little tidbit from you guys. So, a well-placed Marvel source spoke to me at the premiere, and I'm writing, this is going to be a story on IGN, but he said, I said, okay, so Peter and Ned are school in 2023? Did like Ned get held back? And this person said to me, Thanos' snap killed 50% of all living creatures and 100% of Peter Parker's friends. So that's pretty grim.
Yeah, talk about losing the entirety of a high school, literally.
Well, I mean, the five people that he would have been friends with, right, who just happened to have speaking roles. but yeah, I mean, that was kind of interesting. And I'll be curious to see, you know, Far From Home then is going to have this kind of, you know, kind of a grim subtext to it. But yeah, we're going to be, that'll be posting on IGN as well. But yeah, it kind of answers one of those Far From Home questions that I think people had.
Well, I mean, I thought that they had talked about months ago that it picked up moments after Endgame, but I don't know how the vibe of a high school Euro trip road movie clashes with "I just watched my mentor die."
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll see. I mean, there could be some sort of you know, even within Endgame, there's a time jump, but. I don't know. I think at this point they're going to try and just move on and just have it be more about, like, from what I'm trying to remember what Feige told me in an interview about a year or so ago, but he said that basically it's about, you know, what do I do with my life after I've been through all this stuff? And at that point when he was talking to me about that, we didn't know that Spidey died in Infinity War. This was like pre-release, but yeah, I'll be curious to see. I have time for probably like one more question, and then I gotta scoot.
All right. Yes, sir. We appreciate you getting question time with Mr. Feige, and also to spend some time with us this afternoon talking spoilers. So I'll leave you with this. You got the information on the press junket that Feige and crew do have a 5-year plan, that X-Men and Fantastic Four are not necessarily a part of that plan because of, for at least for a little while. What do you expect to happen at Comic-Con or D23 this summer, and what do you think Marvel's 5-year plan includes?
I'll start with the second part first. I think it's going to include Shang-Chi and Black Widow, Eternals, Guardians 3, probably a Doctor Strange sequel. It'll be curious to see what they do with the Avengers brand going forward. I think Comic-Con, well, my guess is Comic-Con is going to be the MCU film slate presentation, and D23 will be all the Disney Plus streaming stuff, and as well as Star Wars. So that's because I think D23 is August, and the fact that it is just for Disney, like, fans and everything, I really think they're going to be pushing that subscription service there, and I think... Comic-Con is going to be about the big 5-year plan. They're not going to announce anything until after Far From Home opens.
Right, and Comic-Con's like 2 weeks after that, so...
Yeah.
Well, Jim, we appreciate you agreeing to come on and giving us time, and we appreciate all of the hard work that you do. I know it's been a crazy month for you over at IGN with, you know, Celebration and with, you know, Endgame and everything.
CinemaCon
as well. But we appreciate you giving us some time. I'm going to be in the LA area for Labor Day weekend, so I might hit you up, but we appreciate you giving us some time.
Awesome, guys. You take care. Thanks as always.
Will do. Thank you. All right. So that was our good friend Jim Vavida from IGN.com. We appreciate him giving us some time to give us his feedback about Avengers Endgame. He gave us a good solid 24-25 minutes, which is, you know, with a guy who works as hard and as long as he does, is very very appreciated. He's, you know, we had that set up about a month ago, and he's been willing to work with us, so I appreciate that. So welcome to our Avengers Endgame spoiler special, if you haven't figured that out by now. I am Brian C. Wood, this is Chad Metz, and we're going to sit here and we're going to talk about our good, our bad, and our not so good of one of the biggest movies in the history of cinema, Avengers Endgame. So Chad... Iron Patriot? No, we don't need no Iron Patriot. We need rescue. Tony Stark does not, Pepper Potts does not wear things that Tony Stark makes gets her, except for one thing.
Go ahead. Just go ahead.
Without Pepper Potts, the world is screwed. Because it's Pepper Potts who talks her husband into taking his time travel technology back to the Avengers. Because he just wanted to go back to bed. You know what she says? But would you be able to rest? And that sparks Tony on his journey toward coming back to the Avengers compound 5 years later. And on we go with the movie. Pepper Potts saves the MCU.
You done?
Yes, because you know this to be true.
Fine, she was there. I acknowledge it. That's all I'm going to say about Pepper Potts.
So, what were your overall thoughts? We saw it two separate screenings. Talk about your screening, because you were just getting out as I was going in. Your thoughts on the crowd size, the atmosphere, the reactions, all of that.
It was a large crowd. When I walked, there were people lined up when I walked in. The line was full. They were running both the popcorn machines. Walking to the theater, and it's almost to capacity. I kind of stopped looking the closer we got to it. The crowd was I don't know if it's like Force Awakens crowd, but it's like not far from that. Force Awakens is typically the biggest crowd I think we've seen. So it's probably a little bit less than that. But there were like three screens going at once when I went at 6. And then I think it teared off after that. So it was loaded with people to see Endgame.
My screening was at 10:30. They had 16 seats left by the time that we went off, and they were all in the first two rows.
So full house, yeah.
Everything in the middle was full. Everything at the top was full. And two rows at the bottom was full.
Yep, that's how this movie is.
Hence the reason why you make 60-plus million on the first weekend.
Yeah. This is...
the first day.
Yeah, this is going to... I'm so eager to see what this movie does this weekend.
Yeah. We're going to rewrite the record books. So, what was your good about the movie? What is the thing that you enjoyed the most?
The thing that I enjoyed the most... So it's going to be the third... I'm just going to say the third act, because that's where all of the comic booky action happens. And, all of my comic book years came all crashing together at one point. But specifically during that, I will go with the moment that Cap has Thor's hammer. Because when watching it, when the hammer just lands on the side, I'm just like... In my mind, I'm just like, pick it up. I know he's going to pick it up. And then he gets it in his hand, and I almost audibly say yes. And you've watched movies with me. I normally don't make moves or anything like that, but I was close to that one. And then the second one that happens not too far after that, when everybody shows up and Cap finally says two words we've been waiting for 10 years to hear, and this time I audibly was saying, say it. And he said it, and I fist pump, and we got Avengers Assembled. And it was, people complained about the splash page shot in Civil War. They got it in this one. Like, if you wanted a full page of just people running together, you got it in this movie, and it was divine.
Yes, the whole third act is a giant comic book brought to life. And it is fantastic and wonderful, and we start with the Holy Trinity of Thor, Cap, and Iron Man, and work our way backwards to everyone. The fact that we have two Infinity Snaps, one from Hulk and one from Iron Man, mm-hmm. which are both awesome. I like the first act stuff. I like the trouble with like the drama as Jim stated. This film is just joyful in that last act. Like, you know, it's just like, this is why you put together an interconnected set of movies, is to get to this point right here where the last hour is nothing but a straight, like, this is our universe type deal.
It's just payoff. This whole right. This movie is payoff after payoff after payoff.
Yeah, and especially, and even in some unexpected ways.
Yeah.
So let's talk about what, some of the ramifications are here, because part of my not so good is the time travel stuff.
Well, then we share that.
Well, okay, so as I explained kind of when we were interviewing Jim, I think the thing that makes that second act drag, and there are great moments in there, the Cap versus Cap fight, the callback to the elevator fight, the Hail Hydra, like there's all kinds of great stuff in there. Which, by the way, if Cap goes back to his original timeline, he knows that S.H.I.E.L.D. is full of Hydra, and so he's going to clean that out. So there probably should still be S.H.I.E.L.D. Once we get to the present day. I feel like 2014 Gamora's programming, flashing on and giving Thanos the information about what's going on, is contrived in a unnecessary plot dynamic, because there's nothing fun about the fact that all of the Avengers get all the stones very easily, and then they all quantum leap back to, you know, 2023 Avengers headquarters. And by the way, again, the whole Spider-Man Homecoming timeline screwing up. Like, I feel like if they'd have done that, things would have been too simple. So you had to bring Thanos into this reality, this 2023 reality.
Well, I mean, after what he did last time, you have to get a more satisfying victory over him than what we got in the beginning.
I mean, what we got from him in the beginning feels that, you know, we're pro wrestling fans. We use the lingo here on this podcast quite a bit. That's a false finish, and it's a hollow false finish, because it's like, well, shit, you guys were able to do this like in 2 minutes, and it took you 2 hours and 48 minutes getting your butt kicked to finally be able to like not go for the head, to finally go for the head.
See, I went with it because it, in that moment, it feels like it feels you with more dread, because it's like, okay, they found him, they're gonna go get the stones, and then we'll see what happens from there. But when he's like, they ain't got none, I'm inevitable, there's nothing you could do. And to compound that, yeah, they kill him, but then to compound that, you get the 5 years later. So it, you know, it amplifies that, because it's like, well, hell, it's 5 years, they still haven't done anything. Thanos, really, maybe he is he's felt more dread in just that 2 minute fight, continuing from Infinity War. So I'm fine with that one, especially because, I mean, at that point he burned off half his body, Thor chopped off his hand. Yeah, that's what happens.
Yeah, I mean, it gets a huge pop. It should, but you know, I don't also quite know how it works that you use the stones to destroy the stones. Like, is it like a genie lamp where you can just like telepathically, I want to destroy the stones?
I'm guessing.
Snap.
I'm guessing that's what happened, because I mean, yeah, he was charred when he left after Infinity War, but that limp and like his arm was like noticeably smaller. I think it's because he used it again, and that's how it mangled more of him.
I mean, dude left it all out there.
Yeah. But so I'm fine with that, but the time travel stuff, and it's, again, if you listen to us any sort of over the years, you know my thing is time travel. I don't like it for the very reason that it creates. It's just begging to have these little inconsistencies that people have picked apart. Namely me. I have the problem. I pick apart in the little inconsistencies. And if you give me rules, fine. Even if I don't really think that's how it should work, I'll go with your rules. They gave us rules in this. I didn't really get them the first time. I got it the second time. I'm like, okay, I'm on board with your rules. But every time there's time travel, there's always one spot where they just kind of have to ignore their rules to service the story. And in this one, it happens at the end with Old Cap, because from their rules, he should not exist. However, to wrap up his arc and to pass the mantle, he has to be there. So, in this instance, they had to ignore their rules. Granted, that end, so people forgive it, but me, years later, I'll just gonna keep gnawing at me, just like Back to the Future 2. It's been 30 years, and that thing still needles at me.
Hey, it gets a callback, a dropback. Hot Tub Time Machine gets a callback as well.
Everything, with everything. I'm surprised they didn't drop a Looper in there.
It's a fun time. Look, it's all kinds of paradoxes. You know, we got the whole thing from Back to the Future about don't run into your past selves. Well, you know, we get a full fight with Cap versus Cap. you know, Tony Stark meets his dad while his dad is getting ready to have him.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's all kinds of really messed up things.
Which I have to say about that scene, they tied in one of the Marvel TV shows, not the ones y'all want, but Agent Carter. Because that Hugh is Jarvis Arson. From, that is Jarvis from the TV show, and he's in this movie, so, I mean, I always thought it was tied in, and they just made it official.
I wonder how the end worked. Did they just, like, text all their buddies and be like, I need everybody to show up at this cabin in black suits and ties? And I can just picture Favreau texting back being like,
that's all we got.
Well, are we attending a wedding or a funeral?
I mean, that's all he's ever worn in these movies, so he was the easiest one. But yeah, that scene, it went through everybody, all the camps. Jim mentioned that they had Ty Simpkins from Iron Man 3 that most people didn't recognize because he's 17 now. Yeah.
The death scene, what I liked the most about it, other than the fact that, of course, Pepper Potts and Tony Stark are the core relationship of the MCU, going all the way back to the proof that Tony Stark has a heart arc reactor being laid in the reef.
That whole last part was just like, I'm sitting there watching it grinding my teeth like, this is validating everything I'm going to have to hear from Brian.
So, I have a question that's disconcerting. Where's his body? They weren't off on Titan.
Oh, yeah.
They weren't, like, on a faraway planet. It wasn't even, like, in the Milano where he would have was just popped up in the captain's chair expecting him to die. Like, he died in upstate New York at the Avengers facility, as mangled and as destroyed as it was. There was a physical body there. Like, you could have had an actual, like, Death of Superman type funeral scene for him.
So, I never thought of that, but just off the top of my head, two things. One, either Tony is the kind of guy who's like, cremate me, be done with it. Or two, since we have gone full round into the comic booky stuff now, every time Tony dies, like, if there's a body, it's a fake. Because Tony's body goes somewhere else. So, if they want to keep that open, you didn't see a body, they can explain it away later, whenever they want to do whatever comic booky thing to redo Tony Stark.
I don't think they're going to go that route, because I think they don't want to lose the emotional punch from this.
Oh, I don't think if they do this, it's not going to be for like 10-ish years.
I mean,
I wouldn't do it.
I mean, let's talk about the end there, because like, Falcon's your new Captain America. Mm-hmm. Valkyrie's now in charge of all of Asgard. You know, Ironheart, a version of Ironheart, is now in her infancy, young 8, 9 year old, 5, 6 years old.
Oh, Morgan. I doubt they would go that route. But
Cassie Lang's now in her teens.
Cassie can go the way of Cassie. Who she is.
Cassie's now in her teens. I mean, Iron Man's dead. Thor's handed everything off. Cap's retired. Handed it off to Falcon. Bucky is probably going to go back to Wakanda. I mean, like, it's kind of, to go to Jim's point, how do you get back to 5 years from now a fifth Avengers movie? Because where we thought everybody was, like, spread apart at the end of the first Avengers, like, they were at least all alive and all in their same roles. Like, we knew that there was more sequels coming. How do you pull everybody back together?
Well, so my thought, just speculation, this is gigantic. You've gone gigantic. So I think what you need to do now is go back in and go back small. So I don't think we get a proper Avengers movie. 5 years is still too soon to me. I think it's like 8. I think we got a ways to wait.
Feige has said that there's a 5-year plan.
Yeah,
and the further down that line you go with that 5-year plan, the more people are going to clamor for X-Men and Fantastic Four.
Yeah, and I think that's why you don't have to. The only reason you do an Avenger movie now is to keep the IP alive. But if you have all these other things going on that you can just say tie Avenger 2, you don't actually have to have the movie.
Well, Civil War. Civil War is an Avengers movie. It just happens to star Captain America.
Yeah, I mean, and people think that, so that keeps that name alive. I mean, the way this movie is going to make money, you don't have to worry about keeping that name alive. You can build all these other properties and go from there. I don't think you need to do an Avengers movie anytime soon.
I mean, Captain Marvel, Black Panther, Doctor Strange, and Guardians all have sequels. Spider-Man Homecoming, I could have sworn, and I need to ask Jen this, I could have sworn that Holland let slip that they were already planning a trilogy. And so I thought the Sony Marvel deal was for three pictures, which would include a third Spider-Man movie that would do Sinister Six.
Like Civil War Homecoming, Infinity War, Endgame, and this one. I think it's either five or six appearances, and I think I'm missing one out of there. So they have to re-up. Far From Home was like, I think, the last one.
Well, the concern that I would have there is that Tom Rothman and his crew would look at the success of Venom, and you know they've already put a Morbius movie into development and actually shooting, that they would want Spider-Man to interact with those folks, and they would take the fruits of Marvel's labor and profit off of them.
That's always been my fear. However, if Holland's appearance, the deal is tied into Holland's appearances. However many appearances they made out the deal for, that's however many he has. So once the deal runs out, they'd have to re-up with him if they don't want to go back. And there's no telling Tom Holland's going to be like, yeah, I don't want to be your Spider-Man because I see what y'all are doing over there. Now, if you let me be Spider-Man over here, okay. If not, bye.
I could see that. Because you don't necessarily have to have Tom Holland's Spider-Man in that Venom universe.
Yeah.
So what was your not so good and your bad for this film?
So not so good was time travel. Bad, I don't really have a bad. I mean some of the, and it just ties into time travel, some of the time travel stuff kind of took me out in the second act, but that's like the worst of it, outside of like the Nebula contrived Thanos stuff. But other than that, I'd have to think about it. I don't think there's anything really bad. Oh, I must include something that's really good. The score. Love the score. It's a big, beautiful, epic score. Off the top of my head, I want to say it's probably the most epic of Silvestri scores, but don't quote me on that one.
Fantastic. My bad would... Other than not enough Pepper Potts.
She was in the whole third act.
She was, and she was fantastic, and she helped Spider-Man, you know, get the glove back to where it needs to go.
It's not like she only had one moment. She had several.
Several, yes. She's the impetus for the whole movie. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I will always, I think, have problems with trying to get Thanos back to the future. I you could have had all of them gather everything up, have the stones, and go back, like, have somebody come up with the idea of, hey, maybe instead of snapping half of existence back into reality, we could just go to Thanos and snap Thanos out of reality, which would then, you know, keep the universe from ever having to deal with this ever again. But, I mean,
I get it, but it was one of those necessary evils.
It was, but it's like, the first act of the movie has such dramatic chops.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my problem. Once you hit the snap, and Hulk does it, and he snaps everybody back, then half the universe is back 5 years later.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, there are a group of people who are literally the leftovers who have been, including the director who had a gay boyfriend who, you know, he moved on to, who've now got the old boyfriend back because he just popped up one day.
This is true.
That's some messed up stuff.
This is true. Which is why I never thought they would go back to, they would stay in the future time. I thought it would reset to now, but I mean,
because now you've gone 5 years, and like the ending shots are all Black Panther back in Wakanda. It's Cassie, a grown up, a more grown Cassie, with Scott and Hope. I mean, people lived to the point where there were support groups for the leftovers.
Yeah.
That Cap was running, which was a nice tie back to Falcon's groups that he was running in Winter Soldier.
Good catch.
Like, it's... Cap is a, like, there are support groups. And now, all of a sudden, one day, your loved ones are resurrected from the dead, and they've been gone for 5 years? I mean, think about that little girl, that Stark's little girl, who now has to grow up without a father. Think about the fact that Cassie Lang survived for 5 years with no grandfather, no grandmother, no dad, and I would presume no mother. Because I would presume that...
Judy Greer.
Judy Greer also got snapped away. So, unless she was being raised by Louise, because he was the only one who survived the snap, she went from a period of being 10 to being 15 without any parental guidance.
I mean,
that kid on the bike probably has no parents, and he's probably been living at home.
No feral kid.
Yeah, trying to survive. Like, it's a big... Like, I need a whole Marvel Plus series and, like... the ramifications of these people coming back to life and the implication it has on resources and the globe in general.
And I think that might be why they did it, because now it opens up these other storytelling possibilities. Again, I wouldn't have done it, because as we talked about it for a year, I'm like, there's no way they let them live in the post-apocalyptic world. They keep that post-apocalyptic world. They have to make them forget it. But they said, nah, that's not what we're going to do.
To the point of, like, Ned and Parker, like, crying when they hold each other, finally. Yeah. I mean, it's like, the world's very much aware of what happened. And then that's not even to say that we don't get a single shot in this film of any newsreels or any news footage that says Tony Stark is dead. So does the world know that Tony Stark sacrificed his life to bring them all back and to keep destroy Thanos?
I'm sure they do. Because I always took the fireworks at the end.
In Wakanda. Still,
they had them in San Francisco, too. So I know they're celebrating the people being back. So I would imagine that they're celebrating the person that's responsible for them being back. So.
I just, it's, that's some heavy stuff, man.
Oh, yeah. Which is why I thought they were going to avoid it.
Like, I moved on with my life. I got a house with my new boyfriend, and now all of a sudden, wait, you're here.
Yeah. It should be interesting. I'm curious to see what they're going to do with it.
And again, you create the paradox if old Cap lived out his full life with Agent Carter. He was a founding member of S.H.I.E.L.D., and he knew that S.H.I.E.L.D. was Hydra, and so he cleaned all those SOBs out, and so there was no Winter Soldier.
Okay, so I guess that's my bad. Not the fact that he's there for the story. The fact that it kind of breaks the story.
Completely!
Yeah.
Completely, because old Cap then knows where the stones are. He knows that we're heading toward a snap that eliminates half of the universe. And he's still freaking in Antarctica and ice. A version of himself is still freaking in Antarctica and ice.
I mean, just by their rules, he should not be there at all. But, again, for the story. But it does break the story a little bit.
I mean, and again, if future Natasha died... So we'd all have to assume that they brought Budapest again, so I have to assume that what we're getting is a Hawkeye and Black Widow movie in which we find out about the Red and the Ledger and Budapest and all of this.
I doubt Hawkeye's in it, so we'll find out probably one of her first missions before Budapest. I mean, if he's in it, it's probably at the end. It'll be like, oh, you're going on a Budapest mission, and it'll be over with.
Yeah, Nick Fury sending her off to Budapest.
Yeah.
Which would make sense. So where do we stand? I mean, here's what we know is in development. We know Captain Marvel 2 is in active development. We know Doctor Strange 2 is supposed to shoot this year. Black Panther 2 has its writer and director back. We know the Eternals is now hiring people. We know that Black Widow has a director. And we know that Shang-Chi has a director.
Yeah.
So, and writer. So, like... That, and we know Guardians is bringing back James, so that's at least two or three years.
It's like 2.5 years.
That should bring you through 2021.
About, because Guardians would be 2021 at the earliest.
Yeah, so you're talking about 2021. That would bring you to. That would still leave, like, 3 more years left on the. 2 more years left on the 5-year plan.
Yeah, and you still got to fill in 2021, because Guardians is probably the only one that'll be 2021. Well, no, Panther will probably be 2021.
Yeah. Guardians, Panther, and maybe, I don't know when they're doing that Chung-Chi movie. I mean, it's got a director and a writer attached, but you don't see the casting announcements the way you do for Eternals and for Black Widow.
Yeah, so it won't be next year. So it's probably 2021.
Right.
So it's Eternals, Black Widow, and it might be Shang-Chi next year, because I would imagine they're not as big as the rest.
No,
so,
but see, we've already got the news that Doctor Strange 2 is filming this year. So.
Oh, okay. So yeah, Shang-Chi would be the year after. Okay, I get it.
Yeah, so I would imagine it would be Black Widow, The Eternals, and Doctor Strange 2 for 2020. And then 2021 would be Black Panther 2, Chung-Chi, and Guardians 2.
Yeah. I mean, the wild card
would stick to their formula of 2 sequels and 1 original every year.
The wild card net is Guardians 2, because it still might
Guardians
be...
Guardians 3.
I mean, Guardians 3. Might be a little bit too close for James to do it
right
next year with Suicide Squad. So that one could be pushed to 2022.
And you still got a Captain Marvel sequel.
Yeah.
Which they haven't confirmed that Baldwin and Fleck will be back. So, we'll see.
Yeah.
But overall, I mean, awesome, awesome geek out movie.
It was. I loved it. Loved every second of it.
And as I told Jim at the beginning of the podcast, Marvel will gladly take my $400 for a box set that includes all 22 movies and has the Iron Man Infinity Gauntlet as part of it.
Yeah. Of course.
Well, what I'm hoping for is they do strictly a phase three set with the Thanos Infinity Gauntlet, and then they do the ultimate box set with all 23 movies in the Iron Man Infinity Gauntlet. Because think about it. In this film, you get I Am Inevitable, you get Avengers Assemble, and you get I Am Iron Man. Which you start with at the end of the first Iron Man movie.
And
you know, the thing you pay off is, you know, I want a suit of armor around the world.
Yeah. This movie got a whole bunch of payoffs.
I mean, like I said in the interview, like, you know, there were all these things running around about what movies you need to see before you see Endgame. Well, guess what? All of them.
Yeah. Like when I left work yesterday, somebody asked, do you think I need to see Ant-Man and the Wasp before I go see this movie? I'm like, maybe not. And then I watched the movie, I'm like, nah, you need to go see it.
Yeah, you need all the quantum realm knowledge that you can get.
Yeah.
And they lied, there was no barf technology.
Not at all.
So, all right, well, that'll about do it for this week's podcast. If you want to follow us on Twitter, I am @BCWTigerFan.
@TheMetsTheory.
Thank you very much, and have a pleasant evening.